So my name is Sandra Steingraber, and I'm a biologist at Ithaca College. I'm also a cancer survivor and a mother of a child with an asthma history. So I'm here at the State of the State Address for all three of those reasons. As a biologist, hydrofracking makes no sense to me. It is inherently carcinogenic. It uses water as a club to smash the bedrock under our feet, releasing not just bubbles of gas, which contribute to climate change, but also radioactivity and heavy metals. And you can't do this without filling the air with smog, which is a threat to the healthy lung development of my son. So as a mother, it's my job to protect my children from harm. And so I'm here because this is just like buying car seats or getting my kids vaccinated to keep these chemicals out of the environment of my children. And as a cancer survivor, I had bladder cancer at the age of 20. That's considered a quintessential environmental cancer. We also know that when you add sediment to drinking water and then chlorinate it, you make bladder carcinogens. And so I can't live in the state of New York if my drinking water is so contaminated. So I'm also here to protect my own health.
Governor Cuomo has repeatedly said that he's waiting to hear about the science. What would you like to say to him about that today?
I think the governor is very focused on waiting on the science. I'm waiting on the science too, which is why the right thing to do is to keep waiting on the science. And that means withdrawing the ESGEIS and starting over, because there is a lack of science in the ESGEIS. So for example, there's no attempt in the draft environmental impact statement to assess the effect on public health. And I think most people would presume that a 1,500-page document that weighs 15 pounds and represents three reams of paper and purports to look at the impact of fracking on the environment would take people into account as part of the environment. In fact, it does not. So the word children appears nowhere in these 1,537 pages. The words breast cancer don't appear. Asthma doesn't appear. Lung cancer doesn't appear. So even though the authors of this report were able to use the scenario for the pace and timing of shale gas development to make predictions about how much revenue and jobs would flow into the state of New York, they did not project the number of additional cases of asthma, cancer, heart attack, stroke, diabetes. All these things are related to exposure to ozone, and we have the scientific ability to actually run those numbers. In other words, we could take a look at the different industrialization plans and under low, medium, and high intensity gas drilling, make very good predictions as to what will happen to our air quality, and then ask how many more cases of childhood asthma, how many more preterm births would that lead to, how many more heart attacks, stroke, lung cancers, and so on. We could do that. And then we could actually monetize it. We could say, how much would that add to the cost of Medicaid and Medicare programs? How many more days of school absenteeism? How much more lost productivity? The EPA has the computer programs to do that kind of modeling and run those numbers very accurately. So I'm waiting on the science, too. I think we should all keep waiting on the science. And in the meantime, we don't go forward with this. And we send this ESGEIS back to the drawing board and say, until people are considered part of the environment, this is not a scientific document that helps us.
And also, as you're speaking to the economics, the long-term economics aren't a good equation either.
The long-term economics are really vexing, right? And we have now a cover story on this current issue of the Journal of the New York Bar Association showing how, in many cases, gas leases actually violate mortgage agreements. And often homeowners insurance agreements, because you've got heavy industrial activity and toxic chemicals being held on property. So what that does is make the secondary mortgage market, which are often bundled into securities, very nervous. And in some cases, it looks like if you wanted to sell your property, you wouldn't, the buyer wouldn't be able to obtain a mortgage for it. So that, at the conclusion from all this, is that fracking would really represent a threat to this very feebly, slowly recovering New York housing market. Now, given that we run the schools on property taxes, and given that fracking could easily lower property values of property, and we have plenty of evidence in other states that it does so, this is also an educational issue. And the governor, I think, really believes in a strong public educational system for New York. He says so in the brand new State of the State Progress Report that he just released, which is kind of the backdrop for his speech today. And he made it really clear that we want a good educational system, but keep raising property taxes to pay for it is unsustainable. Well, if you can't raise property taxes because property values have all gone down, now you've got an even worse problem for the future of education in New York. So from what I see where I sit and live in the Finger Lakes region is that the opposition to fracking is pretty much unanimous, except for the handful of people who think they're going to make a fortune by leasing their land to the gas drillers. But most of us are terrified, and the terrified people kind of split into two camps. Those of us who feel like we could live somewhere else are planning to leave if fracking comes. Those of us who can't are planning to fight. So in either way, the governor has on his hands a citizenry. You know, those of us who have, I have a PhD, you know, I get invitations to all the time to go to colleges and teach there. I'm a mother of a child with asthma as a cancer survivor. You know, I'm not going to raise my child in a gas patch. So if this place industrializes, I'll go live somewhere else. So, you know, I'm the number one donor to our little village library. I'm actively involved in the school system. But I could go live somewhere else. And so the people who are in that kind of position, privileged position, will do that. Those who can't leave will stay and fight. And I talk to people every day who say they're ready to lay down in front of the bulldozers to do whatever it takes to keep this out. So either way, that doesn't contribute to the social stability of New York. And I know Governor Cuomo is really invested in that. I mean, he has this whole plan for 2012 about clean, green communities, helping children walk to school, having places that people can exercise outside to deal with the obesity epidemic, making our roadways safer, and so forth. You know, he's even got something in the plan for next year to compel health insurance to pay for treatment for children who are on the autism spectrum. Well, there's emerging data suggesting that mothers, when they're pregnant, who live near very busy roadways and are inhaling a lot of vehicular exhaust, are at higher risk for giving birth to a child who goes on to be on the autism spectrum. So filling our rural roadways with fleets of 18-wheelers hauling hazardous materials is not going to help us solve very many problems, you know, ranging from asthma to children in the autism spectrum. The data are getting stronger and stronger all the time that air pollution is lethal. Air pollution kills. And the kind of air pollution that we have good data on is exactly the kind of air pollution that fracking will usher in. And not as the result of some hypothetical catastrophic accident, but as a certain outcome, right?
Daily.
I mean, it takes 1,000 tanker truck trips for every well. 62,000 wells are planned for upstate New York, according to estimates from the DEC itself. So you do the math, and you end up with a number with a lot of zeros after it. And then in addition, you have compressors and condensers and wellheads themselves that are wafting VOCs, volatile organic toxic fumes into the air. And when tailpipe exhaust combines with those benzenes and toluenes and other volatile fumes, you get ground level ozone, which is what we call smog. Very powerful inflammatory agent, cellular poison. We know that children who breathe in a lot of smog when they're young actually grow smaller lungs. Their lung development is stunted. So that it affects their athletic ability, right? So it even affects the ability of the athletes of New York for athletic performance. And so by whatever measure you look at, fracking is just kind of a wrong decision for New York. So we're at this, the governor's a very thoughtful man, and we're at this very unique point in history here in New York because we have pushed the pause button on fracking enough to take time to look at the evidence where it's happening in this kind of horrible, uncontrolled human experiment in other states. And it doesn't look good. It looks worse and worse all the time, including, you know, all these brand new earthquakes now in Ohio, showing us that when you force fracking fluid wastewater deep into geological strata, you cause those rocks to become slippery and slide, and you get more seismic activity. Well, there's no real plan for dealing with the billions of gallons of wastewater that's radioactive and toxic that fracking will generate. But the suggestion is that we use Ohio's deep well injections as a permanent form of disposal. So these porous rocks deep under the ground in Ohio are supposed to be the box to hold, you know, a Niagara Falls full of radioactive, toxic wastewater full of heavy metals forever. World without end. Amen. But we just closed down four of them in the last 48 hours because of they seem to be associated with earthquakes. The other possibility is we could run them through sewage treatment plants. But there's no filter known to man that's able to get rid of the radioactivity and some of the dissolved solids. We know that if you have dissolved solids in water and you go ahead and chlorinate that water and drink it, you create trihalomethanes, which are linked to both bladder and colon cancer. Now, as a bladder cancer survivor myself, I can tell you, you can have a long life with bladder cancer. I've lived for 32 years with it. But it's considered the most expensive human cancer. And cancer is itself the most expensive disease an individual can be diagnosed with. And that's for good reason, because you live a long time, hopefully. I have so far, knock on wood. But you're in and out of the hospital getting medical surveillance every few months. Because of all human cancers, bladder cancer is the one most likely to recur. So, you know, I'm a living example of a person who has consumed millions of dollars of healthcare just to keep me going. I don't think you want to make any more of me. I think it's cheaper to prevent cancer. And it's also just a human rights issue. I mean, fracking will kill people. So to bring it into the state now with the information we have showing how lethal it can be is really an act of premeditated murder. We may not know who the victims are, but people will die. And moreover, the jobs that fracking creates are toxic jobs. Jobs in the oil and gas industry, according to our own Centers for Disease Control, have a very high fatality rate, a fatality rate that exceeds that of a police officer. And so these are not jobs I would even want my children to have, right? Moreover, by the time they're my age, the gas will all be gone anyway. So here we're going to, you know, use our precious fresh water as a club to smash the bedrock of our state, to exact a fossil fuel, which is killing the planet and killing ourselves, and then it's all going to be used up, and my kids are going to be left with ruined water, ruined air, these gas wells that are going to be leaking toxic fumes, maybe from time immemorial. And they're still going to have to figure out another way to turn on the lights besides shoving some fossil fuels in an oven and lighting them on fire. So as the adult and as the parent, as a 52-year-old who's alive now, I want to solve that problem. How do we get off fossil fuels? I don't want my kids to have to solve it. This happened on my watch. You know, I was born in 1959. We have the knowledge now to say that fossil fuels is just a dead end. I'm the adult here in the room. I want to solve it. And I really believe that Governor Cuomo wants to as well. I think the problem is fracking was rolled out in the West and in places where almost nobody lives. The Uinta Mountains in eastern Utah, the Jonah Fields of Wyoming, eastern New Mexico. And we didn't really understand the full public health effects of this extreme form of fossil fuel extraction. But to bring that into the third most populous state in the nation, to do it literally in schoolyards and in communities and upstream from an aquifer that provides water for 15 million people of New York City and Philadelphia, that's something else entirely. So I think the governor has enough information now to know that the prudent thing to do is to keep that pause button firmly pressed. Let the data come in, and it's coming in all the time, and then make a really evidence-based decision. I feel confident that this is a man who thinks very hard about issues, and he's not going to make this an impulsive decision. I encourage the governor to come to the Finger Lakes region, to come to the Southern Tier, and see the kind of tension and stress that people are already feeling. I mean, there are already many projects put on hold. You know, people aren't renovating their house or putting on an addition because they're waiting to see whether they're going to have to leave the state or not. Are we going to all move to Vermont? I mean, people have these conversations in my village every day. And so that's one of the messages I think that all the people who are here outside the State of the State address are bringing to the governor. That there's a much better way forward here. You know, surely we can create jobs and come up with an economic plan for the state of New York that doesn't involve killing people, that doesn't involve creating jobs that that are super dangerous, and that doesn't use our precious water, which we're so blessed with here, as a club to smash the ground that we walk on. This summer I had an opportunity to do a lot of research on fracking out west. Went through 20 different states. I didn't go to a single community where people were happy with the way it turned out. Either people were in open rebellion against it, or they were absolutely sunk into fatalistic resignation. But nobody was happy about it. And I even went through the panhandle of Texas at the height of the drought, when, you know, this is a drought unprecedented in history. The crops are withering in the fields, cattle are being sold off, people's wells are drying up. I saw hand-lettered signs along old Route 66 that said things like, "I need water, you haul, I pay." And the fracking trucks were still running. So there wasn't enough water to grow food. There wasn't enough water to give to people, but there was still water to frack the wells and get the gas out. I mean, that's a sign that something's gone terribly wrong. If we've got water to blast fossil fuels out of the ground, but we don't have enough water to irrigate our food, it's time to stop and say, I think we have a terrible addiction problem, and do something differently. And I'm sure New York is not going to, we don't need to repeat that mistake here.
Yeah, exactly. I heard recently it was a former gas man, actually, who also used the addiction analogy and said that we stuck a needle in one arm in the 60s for oil, and we're about to stick another needle in the other arm now. And we really don't need to go in that direction.
But what I often say to my readers is, you know, imagine a drunk who has been terrorizing his family and burning the furniture and has run through all the bank accounts, and now he's just beginning to think about going into Alcoholics Anonymous, but suddenly he discovers a wine cellar buried deep beneath the basement of his house, and he begins to lay plans to blow up the basement to get at the wine. Right? He's run out of whiskey, now he's going to get a wine. So what's the responsibility of his family members? Do we help regulate the detonation of the basement, or do we get this guy into some kind of treatment program? So I think what you're seeing here today is this is the intervention, you know? We don't want to just go from dirty coal to dirty gas. We thought that natural gas was clean. I used to think so too, but the more we realized that the extraction process is no longer simple anymore. You can't just stick a cocktail straw in the ground and up comes a bubble of gas. In the old days, that's how we did it, and probably it was pretty clean because it burns pretty clean. But now we actually have to blow up the underground world to get tiny bubbles and force them to flow up a borehole. And to do that requires massive amounts of water that are permanently entombed underground, massive amounts of truck traffic on our rural roads, it suddenly is no longer so clean anymore, right? So it, maybe in the old days it wasn't a lie, but it's become this whole idea of natural gas as the bridge to somewhere. It's the wrong metaphor now. It's the bridge to nowhere. It's an obstacle rather than the pathway to real renewable energy. And we all know what that means. I mean, it means to get off of fossils altogether.
Yeah.
And we have the technology to do that. I mean, that's the good news here, that the best science shows us we could entirely run New York's economy on renewables within 20 years, and the nation's as well, if we're able to reduce consumption by half. All right, and that's a huge challenge, but surely it's doable.
Mm-hmm.
And after all, if we created jobs by making houses more energy efficient, as Bill McGibbon says, you can't export those jobs to China. You know, you've got to have people coming in, looking at buildings and retrofitting them, and that's an amazing jobs creation program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, we just renovated the Empire State Building. It's now the world's largest, tallest green building. It's saving something like 100,000 tons of carbon a year. And surely if we can do that to this beautiful 1930s icon,
yeah,
you know, we can do it for every single house in New York. And then we wouldn't even need the gas.
Yeah.
And we would create jobs. And we'd live in a clean, green state. We'd protect our air and water, right? I think there's all kinds of possibility for real innovation and real creativity. I'm so impressed whenever I work with green engineers and green chemists, biologists who are looking at doing biomimicry research where they're actually looking at, let's say, how a shark is able to decreased friction and drag as it moves through the water and is able to use the molecular architecture and mimic that in wind turbines so that they become more efficient at capturing wind energy. So when we look to nature for our solutions rather than keeping blasting out fossils out of the ground, then there are all kinds of really cool things.
All the solutions are in nature, and if we keep destroying it, we won't be able to learn from it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, thanks for doing this. I hope the sound turns out okay.